It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning, we'll meet some of baseball's biggest fans, people like Lynn Brookshire.
It is the only place that I know of where there's no clock. You just are there. There's a rhythm to the game, and if you don't love the game, you might miss the rhythm.
That story and more in just a moment. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Teachers gathered on the steps of the state capitol yesterday to rally support for electoral candidates who say they will make fixing the Public Employees Insurance Agency a top priority. Carol Lofton reports.
Organizers hope to continue the momentum they built during the March teachers' walkout. That action resulted in a 5% pay increase for West Virginia teachers and other state employees. Now they want to tackle PEIA. Dale Lee is the president of the West Virginia Education Association. He says it's important for teachers to show that the work in March and February was just the beginning, and that they will continue working in unity to put elected leaders in office that support their platform.
I'm a member of the PEIA task force, and so we want to make sure that the recommendations that are made are carried through at the legislature. And I don't believe with this current legislative makeup that the actions that are needed can get through.
The president of the American Federation of Teachers says they're asking for an ongoing investment in both West Virginia education and West Virginia teachers. Christine Campbell addressed the crowd from the steps of the Capitol.
You have the strength to continue the fight for our children, our schools, and our communities. You're on the right side of justice, and your work is imperative to the future of West Virginia.
Other speakers included West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, Delegate Mike Caputo, and several campaigning Democrats. No Republicans spoke during the rally. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Carol Lofton.
As we head into the final weeks of summer, on the latest episode of Inside Appalachia, we explore the impact of baseball throughout the region. Let's listen to an excerpt from the episode as host Jessica Lilly talks with a historian about the history of early baseball in the coal camp towns of southern West Virginia.
Baseball was really a phenomenon, you know, in the early 1900s, like we can't imagine today. I mean, it really was the national pastime, and it was the West Virginia pastime.
That's historian Stan Bumgardner, who's written about the history of baseball in the West Virginia coalfields. He's also a lifelong baseball fan. He says that back during the turn of the 20th century, just as baseball was rising in popularity, coal camp towns also began popping up throughout southern West Virginia, and with them came baseball teams.
You know, in a town of maybe a few hundred people, you might have thousands of people show up because people from the other towns would come in for the game, and it was really a whole day event. It was a social activity.
These games were usually played on Sunday afternoons in coal camp towns, which were essentially towns that sprang up in the middle of the wilderness, entirely built and owned by the coal companies.
You know, people would take picnics and they'd take the whole family, and it was just a huge social activity. And basically the whole town would shut down. There was nothing else going on. The baseball game was happening, so everything kind of stopped for that.
The coal company sponsored the teams, and they were actually quite competitive, pitting town against town. Coal mine operators could show off their teams while competing against each other.
And you had some very athletic people that worked in the mines, too. That's another thing to point out is that, you know, these were some strong people. I mean, to do the work that coal miners had to do, I mean, they're natural athletes.
Coal companies would even recruit baseball players.
And, you know, assign those people to, you know, less risky jobs, find jobs above ground for them, you know, more office work or less dangerous tasks in the mines. So you literally coal companies hired certain employees based on whether they were good baseball players.
This arrangement was enticing for good baseball players from the coal fields as the wages for coal miners increased in the 1940s and 50s.
A lot of these really good baseball players could make more money working for a coal company and playing baseball than they could in playing in the minor leagues, playing professional ball.
But the coal camp baseball culture was tied to the coal industry's fortunes.
And the height of coal fields baseball was at the height of the coal fields. So at one point you had 125,000 people working in West Virginia coal mines. When you see the decline of coal field baseball, not coincidentally, it goes with the decline in employment in coal mining.
That was historian Stan Bumgardner speaking on a recent episode of Inside Appalachia. Anyone who has been to a baseball game knows there are all types of spectators in the crowd. A lot of times, work colleagues and families get together to spend time together and talk, then actually watch the game. And then there are super fans. Roxy Todd spent a recent evening at Appalachian Power Park in Charleston, West Virginia, with some of these ultra-passionate attendees.
In between home plate and the pitcher's dugout is what's known as Rowdy Alley. And at this particular minor league stadium, one character is helping it live up to its name.
Super Cal! Super Cal! Super Cal! Super Califragilistic Expialidocious!
This is Rod Blackstone.
The toast man, because for 26 years we've been making toast and waving at the bad guys when they strike out. And leading cheers for the home team.
There's a mist hanging over the stadium, a smoky haze of, you guessed it, burning toast.
When they started the development of the plans for the ballpark, they put an outlet here for me.
Blackstone has been doing the toast man thing before they built this West Virginia Power Stadium. Charleston's former minor league baseball team, the Charleston Wheelers, had a stadium in a different part of town. It was there, in 1990, where the idea for the toast originated.
And at some point, somebody said to a said to somebody who was struck out for the other team, "You are toast." And so he started chanting at that point, "You are toast, you are toast, you are toast." And then it stuck. So every time somebody struck out, we were saying, "You are toast, you are toast, you are toast." And in 1992, the guy who owned the baseball team said, "Let's make toast at the ballpark," and told me how to plug in a toaster at the old ballpark, make toast, and so we could pass it out and have people wave it whenever the strikeout happened.
Rooting for the Power, if they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're toast!
And do you buy the bread every time?
Yeah, I actually got some of these loaves at Kroger today for $1. Dollar a loaf, and that makes it fun. And I have a sign that says, "Don't eat the toast, you don't know where it's been," because I do reuse, recycle. So whatever I don't use tonight, I'll bring back tomorrow. But we do have some, it's all about having fun. It's all about engaging people, making it a fun experience in the stands, supporting our home team, cheering for them every at bat, and maybe giving the other team something else to think about so they're not thinking about the next pitch or the next play.
There are a few people here tonight from Blackstone's church.
Can you believe he goes to church? He's very religious.
He's a Sunday school teacher.
The toast man even has his own baseball card. A man named Tim Kirkendall comes up with one of the cards to ask Blackstone for his autograph.
My first game ever here.
Then it's time for the second inning. The home team, West Virginia Power, is up to bat.
And right now I have to do a cheer with my friend.
The toast man does one cheer with another super fan, 15-year-old Reed Houston.
All right, that is Reed, and he is the number one fan of the West Virginia Power. He'll say hi-ho, we'll say lo-lo.
Let's go.
Houston is here tonight with his dad and his grandfather. He comes to as many home games as his dad will take him to. And at every game, he sits right here in Rowdy Alley, cheering for Lolo Sanchez, one of the local stars of the home team.
Hi-ho!
Lolo!
Hi-ho!
Lolo!
Hi-ho!
Lolo, let's hear it for Reed, the number one fan of the West Virginia Power right there. Let's hear it for Lolo, one of the hottest hitters in the league.
Next, I go over to sit behind third base, where I meet another group of fans who enjoy a more laid-back, quieter pace to the game.
My name is Lynn Brookshire. I am a huge baseball fan. I used to say I'd spent more hours in the bleachers than I had at work, but then work surpassed that eventually.
Brookshire has been watching baseball since she was a little girl. Her dad played for the Union Carbide team back when companies sponsored their own baseball teams. Over the years, she's adopted several of the minor league players, giving them regular meals as part of a program that began here in 1990. she adopted Trevor Hoffman, who, after playing in West Virginia, went on to play for the major leagues and was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame earlier this summer.
And the young man could eat like nobody ever ate that I ever knew. He could eat like two full fried chickens.
Berkshire says she's had season tickets since 1971.
It is the only place that I know of where there's no clock. And, you know, it's a wonderful thing to be someplace where there's not a clock. You just are there. There's a rhythm to the game. And if you don't love the game, you might miss the rhythm. But there is a rhythm to the game, and it is just like no place else.
And for some people, do you think that's challenging to kind of like, you know, we live minute by minute in our life. We're always checking our phone, and then we come to the baseball, and like you say, there's no clock. It's like it could go on for hours. Do you think that's hard for people to let go?
I am certain it is, and that's why attendance is falling off nationally. But, you know, for those of us who can let go for that little bit of time, it's a good thing. And I've got a granddaughter who lives with me. And yesterday she said, I'm not getting on my phone till 5 o'clock today. And at 5 o'clock yesterday, she said, you know, this was a good day because I live on my phone too much. And I don't know what possessed her to do it, but I think that we all are too much in the moment.
As with most home games, Berkshire is here tonight with a group of family and friends who, like her, have been watching baseball in Charleston most of their lives.
Do you have any idea how many games you've been to?
Thousands, yeah, because I was a season ticket holder, too, for many years. My dad used to go. We had our seats we sat at.
This is Greg Wegman. When he was 15, he worked at the old baseball park selling popcorn.
I used to carry the popcorn peanuts around, and my grandfather had pitched there back in the teens when he was a little kid. When it was a wooden park before it burnt, my dad remembered driving past it when the wooden park burnt.
There have been several baseball parks in Charleston over the years, and a handful of different teams.
The old park had a lot of history. I don't know if you're aware of it, but Cy Young was at the first lit game there when they had lights, first got electronic lights at the field.
This was in 1931. Cy Young was a baseball legend. And he was there the night that Charleston got a new stadium with electricity that lit up the field for the first time ever. As Wegman, Berkshire, and their friends swap nostalgic stories and baseball memories, the innings pass by us in slow motion. The home team has made some points, but it's a tie at this point. But off here behind third base, which, I'll be honest, is usually where I go when I come to watch baseball, my favorite moment of the entire night is when Lynn Berkshire and her friend Tim Webb tell me the story of a popcorn angel.
One night they came out and dumped all the leftover popcorn.
Yeah, the last game of the homestands, they would always empty out the popcorn machine, and they dumped it out next to the bleachers one night, and they carry it out in a wheelbarrow and just dump it. And we looked down, and there was a kid laying in it making an popcorn angel like you would make a snow angel. So that's a memory that's burned in. I can't erase that one. Oh, I'm sure the kid was a mess, but you know, it's the ballpark. You always go home dirty if you're, you know, 8 or 9 years old. Sure.
I love the idea of that popcorn angel kid, and I think he totally got the idea of what baseball is all about. Despite all the toasts being tossed in the air, the cheers and the chants being shouted, the West Virginia Power ends up losing the game that night. But I'm not sure it matters all that much, even to the baseball superfans.
One, two, three strikes, you're toast!
For Inside Appalachia, I'm Roxy Todd from Charleston, West Virginia.
We'll hear more stories about baseball this week on West Virginia Morning. You can also listen to the full episode of Inside Appalachia wherever you get your podcasts or find it at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.